Welcome to Sheep Farm. And tonight we've got two guests on tonight, not just one. And we don't have to just put up with our Chris, as usual, drinking his red wine. You know, in fact, he's got a shirt on tonight. It must be out to impress because normally he's got his Rabseed Nesbit string vest on with egg stains down it.
It's just unnecessary, isn't it, John? Unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, we've got to start
bit harsh,
with...
Bit harsh.
He's a bit harsh, but it's true, John. Ash has never stopped me before.
So you know, Sharon, I'm the younger brother, right? And I just get
off this buzzer. Yeah. Yeah. Your shirt's not actually even on all the way on, I have to say.
It's not buttoned up. I've got a shirt on. He takes piss on because I always wear a vest.
Right. But yeah. I'm saying you've got a shirt on now, but it's a little bit, you know, it's a bit revealing.
I've got a vest underneath it. Yeah.
I see.
he's got his bra underneath it. But so tonight, I suppose we've just spoiled the intro there by us having a chinwag, but we've got John Hamer back. I think, John, we were saying this is your fourth time on in a year.
Very honoured.
Yeah, very honoured to have you back as well.
Thank you.
And we've got John's writing partner on this latest project, Shannon Rowan. Have I got your name right there?
Yes, that's right.
Cool. I don't want telling off. They've just completed their book and released, it's called Welcome to the Masquerade, Prelude to the Great Reset, which I think the title itself doesn't give everything away, but it should explain what it's going to be about, because we've just lived through the biggest masquerade, probably in mental masquerade anyway, in history over the last 2.5 years. And so, yeah, welcome back, John, and welcome, Shannon.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks. Great to be here. Thank you.
And yeah, Shannon's in a truck at the moment, and it's absolutely hammering down. Am I right there, Shannon?
It's hammering down a bit.
Yeah. In California,
where it's supposed to be sunny at this time of year. But, you know, it must be that
global climate warming change.
Yes, I think that's why we're having rain right now.
Yeah, it's either that or HAARP.
Right. Well, that's really what that is, isn't it?
Yeah. So we were talking before we came on. I don't think this is going to get anywhere near YouTube. I'm not even going to waste my time putting it on there. So I'll put some sort of trailer on to say we'll host it on our own platform so we can talk freely then and talk about what we want. We don't have to mind our P's and Q's or talk round. Although I quite like the names that we come up with, the three jabs, I call them three dart finish. So we come up with our own terms to stay on YouTube, but it is hard to get the language over to people who don't know it,
You would think that your accent alone would protect you from the censorship.
Some sort of algorithm shield. Yeah.
Right. We should all just start talking Yorkshire.
Yeah, yeah.
Be safe.
The Yorkshire code language
words of the
shield.
Future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I suppose we know sort of John's background, but we'll start with you, Shannon. Can you give us a bit of background on yourself? I know we were talking about off air, that type of thing that we were discussing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got into this, the conspiracy world, as you might call it, initially because I lost a really close friend in the 9/11 attacks. And I was living abroad, actually in Turkey, when it happened. And we had a very different perspective on political matters there. And, you know, just to be briefly to say that the American investors had pulled out of Turkey a few months before the attacks, just coincidentally, and crashed the economy there. And so it all became very apparent in the couple of weeks after the attacks when, you know, the war cry went out to attack Iraq, that the whole reason for destabilizing Turkey's economy was to use it for the Air Force bases for their attacks in Iraq. Well, interestingly, Turkey didn't cave to that because they knew that if they did, they'd have a civil war on their hands with the Kurds. So I was getting that kind of information, seeing all of that and understanding that there must be something going on with this. This was intentional. This was an inside job of some kind and so I was always asking these questions. But my qualifications, I've been a writer for some time. I was also a freelance photojournalist. So I was in this sort of news world as well. And I wrote editorials. I wrote magazine articles. And then I did other jobs in between then and now, but I'm an artist and I wrote a children's book. I'm doing some other children's books, but I'm also, yeah, I'm just very, I ask a lot of questions. I do a lot of research and I like to write. And this is my way of contributing to this, what I'm seeing, you know, we're all seeing happening in our world, which is just a complete, you know, destruction of our liberties and our cultures and societies. So, you know, some kind of definitely a global sort of takeover, you know, by the globalists. So, but I met John a few years ago because of his work. I got, you know, and I contacted him, and then we decided to collaborate because I also have I've done a lot of research into EMF topics, like as in electromagnetic fields and how that affects health, because I got directly impacted and impaired by exposure to wireless radiation and actually had to live off grid in very remote locations, had to move several times because of it, because of the encroachment. So I wrote a book about that, which is soon to be released. And so John and I were going to write about the EMF topic alongside the transhumanist agenda. And we started that book, but then this whole, you know, pandemic started and we just decided we have to switch gears and write about this instead, you know, at before. So we're still writing the other book and that's coming after this, but the book took a little longer than we expected. We both had moved a couple times and, you know, just a lot of disruptions, but yeah, it's quite the tome. So you can see that a lot went into it, and it was that 2 years is really not that much when you're talking about like a 700 something page book and what we've packed into it. So,
but John's books are normally really short.
They're normally short. And, I know. So it's very surprising to have something, you know, right, this big.
I mean, every topic though, there's so much to cover. I mean, yeah. That's why my books are so big. And that's why this one, Welcome to Masquerade, is so big as well, because, you know, there's so much peripheral information. You know, if you just take the basic information, there's so much of it, but, you know, there's a massive amount around the edges of it and all the different aspects that go up to make it. Because, you know, nothing happens in isolation. There are so many outside determining factors. And, you know, we try to cover all those as well in the book, you know, so that's why it's so big.
Yeah, I feel the same when I'm doing research. A lot of people give me a hard time when our podcasts go on like four episodes, 2 or 3 hours long. But you go down a train of research and it unearths so much new stuff that you think,
yeah,
I can't just leave this behind.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it.
One compliment we've had from a reader so far is that, you know, I got some feedback that's saying, wow, everything is in here. Like everything you need to know about what's happened in, you know, in our world in the last couple of years and still happening is in here. And they were really grateful it was all in one place. And that was a lot of our intention, was to make it just to put it, you know, all accessible in one place as much as we could. And, you know, even though, they're trying to move us on to other pandemics and other, you know, masquerades. this is still there's so much in here in our book that's relevant, that's timeless, I'll say. You know, even though it covers the COVID topic as the main topic that we're sort of dissecting and everything, the point is to show how they orchestrated this, you know, who the players are and how this came together and how this is a formula. For, you know, this isn't just a one-off. This is what they've used this formula before. You're going to use it again. It's just they're perfecting it. They're getting a larger reach in the world. You know, so I think people will hopefully won't be put off if they're sick of this topic, of the COVID topic. I mean, everybody's tired of it, of course. I mean, I am too, but there's so much more to our book than that. You know, is relevant at any, I think it'll be something that somebody could read 20, 30 years from now and still get something out of.
Yeah, it's like history in real time.
Needs to be documented as well, doesn't it? Needs to be put.
And exactly. I felt that too. Like we both felt that it just needs to be documented. And that's part of what we did.
And I think what you said earlier, you're doing what you do to record all this, what you and John do. And similar sort of thing to what me and Chris do, Mark Devlin and all the other people, Richard Dial from Rich Planet and lots of Rise Above. We're all doing our bit to document in our own ways what's been going on. And I don't think that's ever happened in the scale that I know of anywhere. You used to get a few writers, you know, that were Eustace Mullins and Cooper and all these people, but now there's absolutely loads, isn't there?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and I think, sorry,
Shannon, carry on.
No.
I was going to say, I did a talk in St. Anne's-on-Sea last night at New Horizons. Are you aware of New Horizons?
Yeah. They invited us to do a talk, actually, but it's just time. I haven't got time.
Yeah. Well, I did that one last night, and I was talking to somebody afterwards, and he said, you know, I'm not blowing my own trumpet here, but I'm just telling you what he said, and it's absolutely true. He said, John, out of all the writers out there, he said, you are the one of the few who actually covers everything. Most people tend to focus on a single topic or a couple of topics, you know, like Mark Devlin. Yeah. He obviously does his, you know, his music, and that's his thing. He goes a little bit outside that, but, you know, there aren't that many writers who actually cover the bigger picture, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, so definitely not in the UK. No. Yeah? And I would equate it to similar to Alana Freeland in the US. Her books cover quite big spheres as well. They're not necessarily as big as yours, to be fair. But she does write about lots of different things.
Yes.
But your books go into so much detail and cover so much ground. Yeah. That's what I get from. And also, like we're saying, you can use them as a reference book, because you can go, where did I see that? There. Yeah. It's there in that book. And that's what this book will be used for in time to come. Yes. A bit like Judy Wood's book from 9/11. That's a similar sort of book, isn't it? Well, a different style, but it's a similar sort of
idea. Yeah, it is. It's similar to Welcome to the Masquerade, absolutely, in the sense that it, you know, it goes into massive detail about all the different aspects of what happened on 9/11 and how it was done and the political side of it and all the rest of it. It is comparable. You're absolutely right, Dom. Yeah.
So Shannon, when did you start your? I know you said you had a friend who sadly died in whatever the attacks were on 9/11. They certainly weren't what we were told they were. I'm going down the Judy Wood story because that seems the more reasonable one, if you ask me. But when did you, I mean, we had this conversation with John and he was Princess Diana, but when did you start realizing the whole thing that we live in is a charade?
Yeah, I think John helped me with that, honestly. I was kind of going, I mean, it was like in stages, you know, and I would say between 9/11 and meeting John, it was getting harmed by wireless radiation because it disrupted my life so much and people didn't believe me and I had to move and flee. And it just was it's been so crazy that made me I had to start digging a little bit more deeply into that topic. And then I found, of course, the corruption, you know, and so when you realize you're being lied to about something that big and you lied to something like lied to about 9/11, it just, when you keep getting lied to over and over again, then you have to ask, well, what is true? Is anything true? And I think John helped me because something like the Titanic is another big event that we're lied to that extent. If they can do that, then what else can they do? You know, and then since it just going from there. So the other topics he had in his book, I started thinking a little bit more broadly about it. You know, it's interesting because a lot of people, they'll get one thing. They'll be like, yeah, they lied to us about this, but they just aren't willing to open that up to other topics. You know, it's just, it's too much. It can be really overwhelming when you start to think, wow, it's all a lie. Then you feel like anchorless and it's a very lonely place and it's a very hard place to be. And I think John really helped me with that, dealing with the loneliness and dealing with that. And I helped my partner. So my partner was like, it was kind of like I was opening my eyes to this. John helped me. Then I helped my partner, you know, because he was like, it took him a little longer to catch up, you know, and now he's reading my books and of course, and he gets it all. Like it makes sense to him now, but there was a time where I was trying to tell him some of this and he's like, do you know how crazy you sound? I was telling him that Planned Parenthood was like eugenicist program and it was just there to like, to kill off everybody, you know, or something. And he's like, that just sounds insane. And I'm like, but it's true. I have evidence. Like, you're like, there's evidence. Even when you show people the evidence and tell them to follow the money, you know, it's like, they still don't want to hear it. You have people who just won't hear it. They won't hear it. They'll shut it off. They don't care. It doesn't matter what you tell them, what you show them. It's just, and you know, for a lot of people, information helps, but for a lot of people, information isn't the thing. It's like they have to suffer something. You know, the pain is the greatest teacher, unfortunately. And it seems that even then people don't learn. You know, we keep having these wars, we keep going through the pain, and yet it's still so hard to change and to open our eyes.
You're right about what you're saying though, about people only see kind of a little bit of the picture at a time. I actually feel that is my brief, that is my job, to bring the whole of the bigger picture into focus for everybody and to connect all the dots, because I think that is the most important thing in waking people up. You know, different people are woken up by different things, but sometimes they just think that that's an isolated occurrence of some kind. But it's important for everybody to understand that everything is connected. Everything in the so-called conspiracy world is connected. And in connecting those dots, that's when you get a real understanding of actually the truth about what is going on.
Yeah, well, what you do by doing that, John, is you put a compelling event in front of somebody where it's difficult then to ignore it. Now, that doesn't mean to say they're going to wake up, but what it does do is set that nuance, plant that seed in their mind that further down the line, something will happen in their life. I was speaking to somebody the other day, and there is his youngest son passed away, but he's been let down by the NHS. And he's awoke now. He's starting to realize that it isn't what we thought it was. And after years of his older son, who was a bit like us, telling him that it's all nonsense. And now he realizes that it's all nonsense. There's a great phrase. Have you heard of a guy called Henry Bergson, John?
Yeah, the philosopher.
This sums up. Me and Chris, I heard this on Rise Above the other day. Fortunately, some are born with spiritual immune systems that sooner or later give rejection to the illusory worldview grafted upon them from birth through social conditioning. They begin sensing that something is amiss and start looking for answers. Inner knowledge and anomalous outer experience show them a side of reality others are oblivious to. And so begins their journey of awakening. Each step of the journey is made by following the heart instead of following the crowd, and by choosing knowledge over the veils of ignorance.
Wow, that's powerful, isn't it? Was that Bergson?
Yeah. That's Bergson. That is powerful, is that?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
That stands the hairs up on the back of your arms. It sends a shame. Because all four of us here can resonate with exactly what he said there.
To Dom, I wish someone had read that to me when I was 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was a slow process, isn't it? And like you say, it gets scary, but you never go back there. You still thirst to know more.
Can't go back. Yeah.
I don't want to know that anymore. I need to go backwards.
Yeah. I did a bit of digging in his background, and his sister married one of the founders of the Church of Satan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His sister married Samuel Lyddon McGregor Mathers. And his wife was Moena Mathers, who was Mina Bergson. And he was a British occultist, and he was the founder of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Bergson, although a philosopher, there is a high possibility that he was an occultist as well.
Wow.
Maybe just throwing a bit of truth out.
You know, this is a little bit...
we're going off piece there, sorry.
No, but you're reminding me that this whole thing about awakening, and, you know, that word's kind of out there a lot now, like being woke or awakened. And you know, of course, because of that, and because people are waking up, of course, you know, there's this... a counterattack on us from the mainstream, where they're constantly trying to align us with like loonies who are shooting up crowds of people. And this just happened yesterday. There was 4th of July parade. When the 4th of July parades in Illinois, there was a shooter. I don't know if you heard this news yet, but the interesting thing about, they caught the shooter, you know, apparently he fired like 70 rounds. He used the fireworks as the, you know, to mask the noise. People didn't notice at first. There were like 6 people killed. He went by, he's a rapper, and he went by Awake for his name, his rapper name, which is just another way to get people to think that you know, people who think they're awake or whatever are dangerous lunatics, and we need to take their guns away. I mean, it's obvious that they're pushing this gun agenda, because the only reason this country isn't more oppressed than it is and haven't gotten away with everything they want it to get away with and totally take over and turn it to, you know, a socialist or communistic state, is because people still have the right to bear arms. So ever since the new year, this year, that's been on the main, you know, number one on their agenda, is to like keep frightening people and keep frightening people. And the best way to do that is to have another shooting, another shooting, another shooting. And now they're saying it's like weekly now, you know, that there's these shootings. And of course, all the mainstream news reports says, you know, you have the bystander says this isn't going to change until the laws change. And of course, by the laws, they mean the gun laws. And it's just, always... I mean, it's obvious to anybody who sees this, you know, that they play this by the same book all the time. And it's just the same strategy.
Yeah, I mean, they're desperate to take the guns off the American people, because they know damn well that, you know, whilst everyone has got arms, or a lot of people in America have arms, then it makes it more difficult to control them, because, you know, people are going to fight back if things get too extreme. And, you know, there's certain factions in America especially who won't take any shit at all. I mean, they would have no qualms about an armed uprising, you know, if things got too extreme, and they know this. So that's why they're trying to get rid of guns. It's nothing to do with the fact that, you know, people are... these mass shootings, which are all staged anyway, aren't they? I mean,
right.
I thought it was great
that they called him awake. I mean, of course. You know, yeah. Like, please.
What a giveaway. Yeah.
It always surprises me when they have, like, one of the parents of the shot children or whatever immediately after, and they'll start talking, crying, or pretending to cry. And then we need to get rid of it. And this goes straight into the dialogue, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep, you think, straight there. It's always just right away.
You would not be doing that, would you? You wouldn't. You'd be like, I don't want to speak to anyone. Maybe in a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah,
they're just straight on the TV, aren't they? While it's fresh and everyone.
But some of them, Chris, as we all know, some of them start laughing. I never get that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just. Did you see the Matthew Mahogany news nonsense thing that that's Christian's name for him. He calls him Matthew Mahogany because he's got...
I can guess who you're talking about. Right?
Yeah. like Matthew McConaughey.
Trying to find a film where he didn't take his shirt off.
I just detest him, so thank you. I love that.
He just looks slimy. It looks like he needs his hose down.
It's so disgusting. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
But when he was doing that press conference at the White House, and when he slowed it down, and you could see him smiling underneath. I mean, who comes on at a press conference and goes like this? Who does that when he's trying to be serious?
Oh, wow. Right.
Did he do that?
Watch it back. He goes...
I mean, someone put a video on YouTube. I mean, I watched that and I didn't spot him laughing, but when that guy put a video out and he slowed it down, he when he mentions that one of the murdered children has got his shoes, he puts his head down and he's clearly laughing. As he mentions the murdered child, he goes like that.
And then there's a picture of his wife, those green Converse shoes. God knows, I mean, there's always a pair of shoes. His wife had the shoes on later. There were pictures of her with the green Converse shoes on that they were telling everybody was this little girl's, that were obviously miles too big for her.
Oh my gosh.
And there were a different colour, and the little girls were filthy. Obviously, she's been playing out with them, and these were brand new.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, as somebody who actually lost somebody in the 9/11 attacks, that I was not asking for us to go to war as a response. And that was the man on the street response they got for the news blurbs. We need to, you know, everybody was like up in arms. We got to fight. We got to fight these terrorists, and they're not going to do this to us again. You know, this is America, number one America. We got to get these terrorists, right? Mm. Well, I know other people who lost people. None of us, nobody who actually lost anybody in those attacks wanted to go hurt anybody else. It wasn't going to make me feel better to kill innocent people in Afghanistan or Iraq. You know, that wasn't on my mind at all. And it wasn't on anybody whose minds who was actually grieving and actually impacted by this. Because obviously that was their whole point to begin with, was to have this excuse to have their wars. And, you know, and it's like, so of course, that's the soundbite they get for the news. I mean,
one of the parallels with the Ukraine now. Do you remember the after the 9/11 when the French wouldn't join the attack on Iraq?
Right.
They're pouring all the red wine down the drain, much to my horror. And then with the Ukraine one now, they were pouring Russian vodka down the drain. It's just the same playbook. Yeah. Anything that's Russian, right? You know, they were clearly getting people in restaurants to do it and probably didn't really realize what they were doing, you know, getting involved in the propaganda. Right. But I mean, to think that a solution to a problem of some terrorists is to bomb an entire country, you've got to be absolutely insane.
And like none of those alleged terrorists on the alleged planes were even from either country that we attacked.
And they made
like that's the amazing part, you know. That's the amazing part. It's like they were Saudi Arabians, but no, you can't go to war with Saudi Arabia because we have this oil deal with them. You know, it's like, I mean,
they're our team. We can't go to war.
Exactly.
With them.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, so, the Bush and Bin Laden families were big buddies, weren't they? I mean, they used to visit each other and, you know, ramp for dinner and all the rest of it, you know, so. It was all bloody theatre, wasn't it? As everything else is.
It's amazing, and your books cover it. What we do covers it a bit. Whatever, you know, the stuff that we've all seen, that you look at it and think, and again, going back to this awakening, I always come back to this because I think it's a strange phenomenon that we were talking to a psychologist on one of his podcasts, and he was saying that during the Vietnam War, when the guys came back who were being captured by the Viet Cong, they knew that only 5% of them would ever break. So only 5% of everybody who were captured would never break, they'd die, prefer to die before. And they equate us to be the same type of person in a way. Yeah. So they know there's always going to be 5% of us, roughly.
Mm. Right.
And But why? Why is there always, are we the balance? Are we interdimensional beings? Are we? Because when we're talking to people, we might as well be talking Chinese, you know. Because
or Yorkshire,
but if you discuss football with somebody or whatever sport, they'll be all over it. They'll listen to you or a TV program. Mm. As soon as you mention something about this, about what's in a vaccine, for argument's sake, they just turn off.
Oh yeah, you can see it switch off. You can just see it in their faces, like they don't hear anything. I actually had this conversation with somebody. She was wearing a mask. This was sort of like in the early days of this, and you know, she wouldn't take her freaking mask off to talk to us. And I was like, you know, anyway, I'm not gonna go into the whole story, but like I told her everything I could as precisely as I could to like why she shouldn't wear a mask, like why it's ridiculous, and then. Her face was like, well, I couldn't see her face except her eye, but her eyes were like wide. And she said, she's finally like, I'm sorry, I didn't really catch any of that. She's like, it's like a lot of, she was like, maybe I'll need to hear that again, some of that again. She admitted she sort of tuned out.
a friend of mine's father, I won't mention his name, but he had the first jab. And then went playing golf and it rained and he got this bad cold, whatever it was. And he said, yeah, I got that cold from, and it was quite bad as well. I got it from playing golf in rain. But he's had a cold every month since, and he's had all three arm spears. Yeah. All three of them. Mm-hmm. And every time I speak to him, he's ill.
And it's supposed to protect them from being ill somehow, but no, they won't ever admit to that. And I have the same situation, a good friend he's a good friend in many ways, but he just doesn't, he just kind of tunes us out, but he got the jab. He wasn't interested in getting it. So he decided to apply for a job where they end up requiring it. And he's like, fine, whatever, you know, he wants the job. And he didn't really need the job that much, you know, like if he cared enough about his body and he knew like how dangerous this was to do this, he wouldn't have done it. But of course he got sick within the weeks after that, really sick. And he's still been sick. Actually, John, this is our friend, Paul.
Yeah.
And I saw him the other day and he's like, I can't understand why I haven't been sick in years, like 5 years. I don't know why I'm so sick. I heard that he actually got tested. He decided to get tested for COVID because he thinks he got COVID. Even though I kept telling him it's not real. Yeah, I've been telling him like all this time that there's no virus and they haven't isolated it, you know, going through all the information, like he doesn't hear it. So he gets he tested negative, by the way. Right. Yeah. And then he's like, why, what's happened to me? It must be some bug. Oh, it's not. Oh, couldn't possibly be all the poison you injected into your bloodstream and lymphatic system, you know, that is now potentially genetically altering you forever. You might be sick forever now. He looks terrible. I mean, he looks really bad. And he can't get his energy back. He doesn't know why, you know, mysterious.
Yeah.
Serious illness. Maybe it's monkeypox.
Yeah. we get them coming in the clinic and they have a conversation with them. And they'll say, yeah, I haven't been right since last March. And I go, what did you do last March then? And they go, well, no, I can't remember really. Blah, blah. And I'm waiting for them to tell me they've had the jib jab. And as soon as they say that, they just don't register. You know, the cognitive dissonance is unbelievable.
Yeah, because they told us it's safe. They told us it's good for us. They tell us, actually, we have this amazing, huge billboard in our little town here that's actually there's a lot of resistors here. I've heard that only like there's at least 40-something% that won't get the jab. Wow. So we're like heavily targeted with propaganda. There's billboards all over our little town. And one of them says, John, this is one we put in the book actually was like, COVID-19, it was 13% of people who, you're 13 times more likely to die of COVID-19 if you are unvaccinated. Right. And then you have this little asterisk that says in tiny print says based on statistics from 4 days, 4 days of statistics, decided, right? 4 day period. And they don't even tell you what the data is. They just
trust
say
the science, people. Data. Trust the science.
Yeah, right. Trust the science. Now, because so then the next week it was 16, it changed to 16%. Well, since then they changed it. They changed the sign too. It was like a nice blue, it's blue colors, relaxing. They changed the sign to black and white with red on it. And the red part is that now the dye is in red, you know, we'll die. Yeah. And it says 30% more likely to die of COVID-19 if you don't get vaccinated. And you're just like, wow, unbelievable, unbelievable. And they're spending millions of dollars on these campaigns, millions of dollars. They don't care about public health. If they cared about our health, there'd be so much more you could do with all those millions and billions to actually help people be healthy.
But it's, you
know? I mean, none of these measures are making people healthier. Everybody's sicker. So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Have you guys heard of a guy by the name of Dr. David Martin, an American doctor?
I've heard of his name, yes, John, yeah.
Yeah. Well, my friend and I watched an absolutely fantastic video from him. Which I will send to you because it's it's a must watch, and you too, Shannon. I'm not sending it to you either. He's been following the money on all this shit that's been going on the last 2 years. He's been following the money on it since 1999.
Wow!
So he is absolutely, totally au fait with all the background to it. You know, he's gone into far more detail than Chan and I have even, you know, and he's absolutely compiled he tells the complete story of what exactly went on politically and actually physically as well. But he reckons that within the next 6 years, there's going to be 700 million deaths, 700 million as a result of the arms spear.
Yeah.
I was just about to ask you where you thought that was going. Because nothing's really personally impacted me, but what I have noticed is, like you said, Shannon, people getting sick and, you know, just little comments like my missus said, I'm not going to say it, but anyway, so lost loads of weight and they're looking really not well. And I think it's stress and, you know, things like that. Or there was that one, the missus said, someone said that someone's child was born and it had some brain defect. And my missus said, have they been jib-jab? And they went, what's that got to do with it? Had the mother been jib-jab, should I say? And they said, what's that got to do with it? There was no, and it's just little things like that, you know, and you just think after an initial few people getting injured, like they're talking about in the British news now, is it just going to be so slow and gradual that you're not even going to notice? I mean, we said this from the beginning.
But
you'll wake up one day, go outside, and you'll be like, I'm sure there are more folk around than this.
Yeah. Well, the drop in population started well before this, didn't it? The replacement rate is 2.1. I think in the UK it's dropping below 2 now. So the replacement rate has been dropping. I think in the 1960s in the UK we're around 5. So five kids per woman in the UK. Now it's 2. I mean, that tells you a story in itself. Less people or more people are needing IVF. So now you're going to have to be chosen to, if you're not just capable, but again, from a eugenics point of view, if you have the family genetics to have a child, they're going to pick you now, aren't they? You're going to be the chosen one. So I think a lot of the jabs are about sterilization as well.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's been, like you said, this has all been going on, and we have a chapter about depopulation. I mean, we have a depopulation chapter, a whole chapter dedicated to that, that agenda, which has just been spelled out in so many different documents, including Agenda 21, of course, and 2030, that, you know, the Earth's carrying capacity is really such and such, 90% less than what we have. I mean, which is absurd. It's completely false information. And it's easy to convince people when they're living in overcrowded situations. I try to tell people there's a difference between overpopulation and overcrowding. When you push everybody into urban centers and away from the rural areas, like people used to live, at least in this country, 100 years ago, it was something like 80% of the people were living on the land in the rural areas. And now it's the opposite, or, you know, some don't know exactly the right numbers, but that's happening everywhere, you know, and it's been happening. And I mean, I've been to India, I've been to, you know, places with extreme crowding problems. And I've been also in the countryside in India, and there's a vast amount of space that is not populated, vast, you know, beyond imagining. And this is obviously the same in China, you know, all these places were like, oh, they've got a billion people, you know, and I mean, they've got enormous, they have their own continent. It's enormous. You know, you can't even imagine. And, you know, we don't even know if those numbers are correct.
Even in the UK, I mean, I know we're only a small country, but if you get on a train from where I am in Cambridge to Yorkshire, you don't see anything, it's just nothing. Fields and fields and fields.
Yeah.
And it's definitely out here. Small place.
And I mean, I think, and they're continuing with the agenda to move people into cities that are smart cities that are, you know, have these crazy frequencies that are really making people sick and sicker. And I mean, if you really cared about the planet, health of the planet, health of the people, you would not be introducing anything so-called smart that has 5G, 4G, you know, I mean, this is weaponized technology. And there's no way that is going to help sustain anything, except I make this joke, but I mean it. It's like they're altering the planet in such a way to make it inhabitable only by like non-biological machines, by robots, not by human life, not by biological life. I mean, they're subtly changing our language, getting us to rethink what is life form, you know, what you call life. And I think a big part of the agenda with the jab and the genetic modification is to, because under genetic patent laws, technically speaking, there is a precedent for saying that you are now not
longer,
you know, you could be owned by whoever owns the patent on the genetic material now in your body, just as they do with farms. And so that's going to open up the debate about, well, what's a life form? Because you're going to, if they say, well, you're synthetic now, you're more synthetic than you are biological. So you don't have rights anymore under the laws for biological life forms. So they're going to have to like open up the definition of life form to include synthetic life forms, which includes the artificially intelligence, you know, powered robots, which are getting more and more lifelike looking, which are talking and saying things like they want citizenship. There is one that has citizenship in Saudi Arabia, one called Sophia.
Just been a Google thing, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Lately, it's just been in the news lately. I wondered where that was going, to be fair. You knew it was going somewhere, but.
Yeah, I mean, because that means, and they admit that these robots see, they record everything, they send it to the cloud. You know, they're constant. It's a surveillance device. And so you're saying the surveillance device, it should be, I mean, not that we don't have them anyway in miniaturized form, but you know, this is just taking on a human form. It's almost a mockery, really. I mean, I see it as completely offensive and a mockery to a human life form to try to mimic it, to make a robot, and to get us to think along the lines that we're like a machine. We can be programmed. We have code that can be changed and programmed. We're not really any different from that. I mean, how that's probably, it takes away the whole idea of there being spirit and, you know, energy, life force to everything that's living, and make it reduces us to these terms, you know, reduces us to like being just like a machine.
There's a lady, Shannon, who, what you're talking about there, she's called Suzanne Gilder. I don't know if you've heard of her, John. She's a, she was part of the D-Wave invention. With Jordy, I forget what it's called now, anyway. But she did a talk at the Singularity Canada Summit. And her talk was, should robots have rights?
Right.
And you listen to that, honestly, she is fucking mental.
They are mental.
Sorry, my language. Yeah.
But, come off the fence, mate. What do you really think?
Well, she is gaga.
Oh, yeah. Honestly. They are. They're insane.
They're insane.
Insanity is becoming the new norm. Like, this is the new normal. Like, the people in our in leadership in these positions, they're insane. And so it makes people like us seem like we're insane by comparison. I mean, the more you radicalize what's normal, called normal, the more radical people who are actually what was the normal or what should be the normal are considered.
That's the only reason
we're considered radical.
Maybe to them we are insane because we're the infiltrators, if you like, on their plan. So we are insane, really, to them.
Maybe.
Maybe we're... if you think about, I mean, again, goes back to that. Why us? Why are we? Why have we decided to want to be ridiculed and hung out to dry and what have you by friends, family, work colleagues, et cetera, et cetera, by saying what we talk about and researching what we talk about and sounding mad to them? So maybe we, I'll use the word insane or awake. It's might be the same of the same thing, really. To them, because it's
all relative, isn't it? Really?
That woman you're talking about, she's on par with Ray Kurzweil. He's like,
that's right,
he's the engineer director now at Google.
Nice.
He's written a few books, and John and I both unfortunately own a copy of his The Singularity Is Near, because we need to like know what they're up to, you know, like, and of course it says New York Times bestseller on it, whether that's true or not, you know, I doubt. Yeah,
know thine enemy, isn't it?
Yeah. No, and he says things like, oh, we might not. He calls the heart an organ that is a cumbersome organ that needs to be gotten rid of. Yeah. He thinks that we won't need a heart. We'll be with nanotechnology. We won't need a heart. We'll replace all these different organs because we'll just have nanotechnology through us. We'll only need. And then he talks about eventually it's like replacing everything, because he's like, you know, the skeletons last or whatever. I mean, but it's like all these things will be replaced.
In that Wizard of Oz, who needed a heart in the Wizard of Oz? Tin Man won it. Oh,
yeah. I mean, that's right. It doesn't have a heart. I mean, that I did think of the Tin Man, actually. It just reminded me exactly. And it's just incredible the way you read this and you're like, with all the censorship, you know, that's not censored. Like, that's okay. You know, I mean, it's amazing. Like, I just can't understand that this is like they're talking with a serious face about these things in the open. It's all in the open. Nobody's flinching. Nobody's saying anything.
Elon Musk was announcing his Neuralink.
Yes.
And I was watching that and everyone's cheering and clapping. We'll just drill a little hole in your head and we'll put this disc in. Kind of like a pump. And everyone's
calls
it fucking mental.
He calls it a Fitbit for your skull. And he tests on monkeys and then on pigs. He said, and I quoted him in our book, that pigs are very similar to humans. That's why he uses them.
Yeah, like, they brought the pigs out on stage and everyone started cheering.
Gertrude.
My God. And then he brought out that machine that he said they'll be able to do the operation in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And clapping and cheering that. And you're like,
I'm a madman.
This is not insane.
He's insane. And he's, of course, he can say that about humanity because he doesn't consider himself human. You know, he's one of the elite. And he's got ties to the technocracy group, you know, going way back. I mean, the celebrity worship is what works. You know, he's attractive, he's like soft-spoken, and people kind of go, wow, like, and you know, the women are probably like, oh, I wish I could marry him.
And you know, I don't know, it's like, well,
I don't know. And you're just like, he's crazy. He's like, he's the one responsible.
Hang on, Shannon. Massive attractive. Ooh, well, he's got a wig on, right?
Does he?
He's had his formica put in his forehead.
I've got a bit of a thing about people wearing.
Seriously? Oh, no, are you serious? Is he? I don't know.
I've got a video. 20s, he were bald, yeah.
He'd have been balder than me.
Yeah, that's funny. You're right. So I kind of remember seeing something a while back when had his hair look more receded. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, I'm saying this is the general public.
I know you are. I know.
But it's not even in, though, is it?
I don't find him attractive. I think he's a.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, but
I don't think is he in control of anything? Because I've never heard that guy.
Well, the problem is with him is actually a lot of power, because he's the one behind the Starlink, 5G satellites.
No, what I mean is, Shannon, is he actually him, or is he just a voice or a face for?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I mean, is he being used?
I think he's just
figurehead.
Like Bill Gates, he's just a figurehead of that system.
Yeah. Sure.
Because humans, we need to put something that's happening. We need to put it to one face, like Hitler.
Yes. Of course.
I'm
sure that's part of it. I mean, I don't know that he's the brainchild of all this. He's just he's the face on it. But he represents all kinds of horrible things. And I always found it, as I also write in the book, he's like quite the enigma at first, because you're like, why is he saying all this stuff against AI? And he's developing all these technologies that are completely dependent upon it. And then you realize it's because it's to get us afraid of, he says, we can't beat it. We have to join it. That's his thing. Like, so AI is going to take over our jobs and everything. And it's going so fast. There's nothing we can do about it. The only way we have a chance, that's why he's helping us graciously, is these brain chips, so that we can be as smart as the AI. We can directly link up to the cloud.
I mean, that's the kind of stupidity in it. That
it's completely ridiculous.
Just in case anyone out there is wondering why this push towards AI, why this push towards transhumanism? Well, in the summary of the book, we cover that. And basically, in a very small nutshell, what it is, for millennia, these people have been trying to control us through one methodology or another, whether be it by violent suppression, by,
mind control,
lies, by propaganda. The thing is that they're terrified of us. Okay. Let's not make any bones about it. They're terrified of us. They need to control us. There's 8 billion of us. There's only a few thousand of them. So this is the way that they are now going to do it. There are patents out there on the internet for physical control of human bodies remotely, physical control of our mind, remotely. They can either read our thoughts or they can put thoughts into our brain. That technology is there now. There are patents out there on the internet, as I say. They believe that they're almost there, and they see this as the ultimate in control. And this is what they've been after for millennia, a way of absolutely infallibly controlling us. And this is the way that they've decided to do it.
And the masses are just lining up and accepted, banging pots and pans on the doorstep and going with it.
Yeah. So, for anybody out there who's wondering what the hell is going on and what is the point of it all, that's the point. It's ultimate control. That's what they see. And if they do achieve that, God forbid, then they've won. There's no two ways about it. They have won. We will be unable to fight back in any way. So it's absolutely vitally important that everybody becomes aware of this, and also that, we resist it as much as we possibly can, because that is end game for them.
Are we the Terminators then?
We're the Terminators.
Are we the John Connors? We've come back in time.
Maybe. I mean, they have it. The thing is, John's saying this might be hypothetical, but they have tested it and it does work. I mean, there's a lot of evidence that they just haven't gotten all of us, but these bad lone shooters are a good example. Because they always end up saying, I heard voices to tell me to do this, and this is often after hours and days or weeks of gaming. And I think that, not to blame the gaming, but it's part of it, because the reason the gaming's important and the gaming addiction is because it's a virtual reality, and they're trying to get everybody into virtual reality one way or another. And gaming's one way for some people. And so those are the current kind of extreme examples of people who've given up their whole lives, either young or even older, you know, often their kids, but who disassociate with, or so disassociated with reality, then they're sleep deprived. They have all the right, it's all the right conditions for control, for mind control, which has been used in camps, you know, in the past. I mean, this has been experimented upon in so many different ways, so many different programs the CIA's had and everything. So you've got sleep deprived, food deprived, you know, hungry, malnourished, and living in a virtual reality. It's pretty easy to tip over, and then you just do the voice to skull, and it's pretty easy to get yourself a shooter. You know, it's not that hard. And it's been, I mean, a lot of them regret it after. These kids, they killed their parents. They didn't know where they were, who they were. They couldn't resist the voice. They were, you know, their game got taken away, whatever. They were like pushed over the edge somehow. But you know, it's happening. Look what's happening to us on a large scale. Lockdowns, people isolated. Isolation is a form of torture. It's what is used for mind control. So you've got people on a massive scale who are isolated, who are only living in virtual reality. They're only on their TV, on their computers and their TVs. And at the same time, you've got these, the futurists and all these people, you know, leading all this, saying, oh, isn't this great that now we can use all these new technologies to keep people inside, and they don't even have to go. Maybe this is better. Look, oh, it's helped the planet, because, you know, people weren't driving around and traveling around. Look how much greater it is now, supposedly, you know. And so, not to mention all the industries, that the factories are still spewing out their coal, you know, powered smoke to manufacture billions of disposable masks and syringes.
It's just absolute nonsense. And, yeah. The whole thing is nonsense.
So, but they have this, they're getting us to accept, like, living as avatars. I mean, that's what Japan was predicting, you know, just a year or so ago, that, or 2020, that their population, at least half the population by 2050 or 2030 even, is going to be living as avatars. As it says, isn't it great? They can stay at home. They can experience the world outside through robots. They'll have robots all over the place. You could decide to go fishing at the high seas. There'll be a robot, you know, surrogate for you. You can just pop into the robot's brain, you know, and control it, look around you. And it'll be just like, it's not just like, this is not a substitute for living people. It's not a substitute. It never will be. You know, we cannot accept it as one. And it's like, it gets easier and more inviting and more enticing to accept when you get fatter because of the crappy foods you're eating, when you get sicker because of the vaccines, and when you lose your will to live because of just the demoralization, when you lose your job, whatever, and that's all you've got left as an alternative, then the fantasy realms are really inviting. It's really easy to decide that maybe is better, because your body hurts all the time. You don't want to go fishing. You don't want to go surfing yourself, you know, so it's easier to accept it. And so it's like, it's all ties together. It's to get us all like sick and disabled, so that we'll accept living as avatars and then as cyborgs, and then we just won't exist altogether.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard, just sorry, John. We've done two or three interviews with him, like we have John, Jerry Mazinski. I don't know if you've listened to any of the podcasts we did with him. No. He's a psychotherapist over 40 years. Going back to the voices that you were talking about, Shannon.
Yeah.
And he started studying what the voices were saying within these psychotics that he was helping in their institutions. So he started asking, nobody asks what the voices say, because they just call them hallucinations and he'd take a shitload of drugs. Yeah, wipe them out. But he started asking what the voices were saying. And on a number of the patients that he was talking to, the patient came back and said, the voices are asking, why are you asking these questions? This is our life. Stay away.
Wow.
You should listen to the interview that we did with him, the first one especially. We just did one last week.
Not from that, but yeah, I've heard, you know.
And so these people are entering this virtual world. I mean, whether that's from another dimension, whether it's something from, I don't know, Langley or whatever, that they've been experimenting with for the last 50 years, and they used it on Saran Saran or all the other Oswald and all these other people, and they didn't have a clue what they were doing. it's been around for that long, this voice to school or voice to brain technology. Right. Sorry, John.
Just as a postscript to what I was saying before about, you know, this is their ultimate goal, to get us remote controllable both by in body and in mind. What's facilitating this? It's the vaccines. Yeah.
Yeah.
The contents of the vaccines are facilitating this, and that's why there is such a push to get them, to get us to take them. It's nothing to do with any bloody silly non-existent virus. It's about getting that graphene oxide and all that metallic shit inside
and
us.
And the DNA change, yeah.
Yeah, and that facilitates that. That pushes us on to the next step towards transhumanism, and you know, which, as I keep saying, is the ultimate goal. That is their ultimate goal, yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing about graphene oxide is it's been used in already in antidepressants before this. And so it has also this sort of like numbing effect, you know, where people like they stop caring. And so you see them like so complacent. Why are they so complacent? Maybe because they're full of graphene oxide, you know, besides which makes you more susceptible to the 5G, you know, reacts with it. And so you've got that. And we know that that's in it. In fact, you know, interestingly, I think it's, I got a news article today item saying that I think it was Uruguay. I think that's the right country. I need to look again. Uruguay is demanding that Pfizer admit what everything that's in the vaccine, including graphene oxide and nanotechnology. Wow. Yeah. And so they're like they're pressuring them to like actually admit to it because, you know, there's been enough investigations done that have shown that it's in there. They admit to some nanotechnology because just the lipid proteins that are supposedly encasing this synthetic DNA or our mRNA is nanotechnology right there, you know, and that's, it's, and it's synthetic. So you, even if, because I'm not sure any of us fully understand DNA. And if we're taught the truth about DNA, what that is, some people are saying it's actually just gas bubbles. I don't know about that part of it, but what I do know, you know, there's things that we do know, we can prove, and we can focus on, and again, like even just this encasing, that even if there's nothing really in there, you know, the fact that these nanoparticles that are, you know, petroleum derived, I mean, it's a toxic substance, you know, and you're going to react to you're going to, you know, be poisoned by it, period. I mean, nothing in any of the vaccines we've ever had are good for us.
It's not a nutrient, it's all is it? Poison. None of it. Yeah. None of it's a nutrient. I mean, one of the ingredients in a lot of the vaccines, and I've rabbited on about this for a long time, is an ingredient called polysorbate 80.
Yes, and that's also called, that's a sterilizing one.
Yeah, it's got lots of different names, and there's polysorbate 20, 30, yeah, tween 80 yeah. and what mm-hmm. have you. And it's basically plastic and emulsifier that it mixes, it's used to mix oil and water together, if you like, so things that don't mix together. And also it breaks, now whether there is a barrier or not, that's a question again, but the blood brain barrier.
Yeah.
So it enables things to end up in the brain, which again, going back to the lobotomization of what we're talking about, the zombification of the masses, that would sort of add up to this stuff being lodged in the brain, wouldn't it? And changing how they're thinking or blocking something.
Well, and I learned something interesting through our research for the book, and I also write about this, about another way that anything that's injected intramuscularly, which is how most all vaccines are injected, goes into your lymphatic system and the bloodstream, right? So when people say, well, it's not into your veins, so it doesn't go into the bloodstream. It goes into your bloodstream and it goes to the lymphatic system. And that's why they use intramuscular, because that's the best delivery they admit to get into the whole body. Now, the lymphatic system, all the way up until 2016, was assumed to have stopped at the base of the, at the top of the spine by your head, right? And not go into your brain. Well, they found out finally, or they told us finally in 2016, that actually the lymphatic system extends, it can definitely travel into your brain. And so what happens is the white blood cells carry these poisons, they're trying to get rid of them, end up in your brain. And this is why the autism, actually, it's not just mercury, it's aluminum is even probably the worst offender when it comes to childhood vaccines and autism, because they finally got rid of the mercury. It's almost like that whole thing was another masquerade. They probably just, anticipated this, or they focused on the mercury when, so to take focus off the aluminum, so that eventually when they got rid of the mercury, they say, see, there's still autism. That has nothing to do with it.
They didn't actually get rid of it though, did they?
They did it in the flu shots or other shots, but but the aluminum is there. And the aluminum actually is just as worse even. I mean, we know it causes Alzheimer's and affects, you know, damages the brain, causes encephalitis.
And it's in what? They put it in. They put it in the water supply as well. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? Chemtrails. Yeah, lots of nice things in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the aluminum's raining down on us now, but apparently everywhere. And that makes sense, because it's taking us, depriving us of our cognitive function, taking our memories away from us. You know, all of us are affected. And I mean, one of the other things about this book that, like, even just looking back on it after, you know, we wrote it and got it out, I noticed that reading back on some of it, I thought, wow, I forgot about that. I already forgot. And, and I already, and I forgot how shocking it was at the time. And I'm already jaded and numb to like a lot of this information. And that's what we have to remember. We have to remember what happened, how it affected us, how it still affects us, and, you know, how it's changed us.
Right.
Like, all of us have been changed by this.
We're coming up to the end of the first hour, believe it or not. I feel like I've blinked and an hour's gone. So what I want to ask is, where can people get hold of your book?
Well, it is on Amazon currently. Hopefully it'll stay there for a little while.
It's on my Amazon page.
Yeah, and say on John's Amazon page. I mean, you can search either of our names. You can search the title and find it easily there. It should be also on any book buying platform. I mean, we have, you know, the sort of enhanced distribution, they call it. It was published on Amazon, though. And so, yeah, you can easily find it there.
And just remind people what the book's called again.
Welcome to the Masquerade, Prelude to the Coming Reset. Even if you just put Welcome to the Masquerade, you'll see it. There's maybe like a band or a, you know, an album by that name, but there's no other book by that name that we know of.
So we're going to close down the first hour. Have you got to say, Chris?
No.
So we'll close down the first hour and we'll start again, the members hour. So thanks for listening in. If you want to join us, come to sheepfarm.co.uk and listen to the second hour of recording with Shannon and John, and we're going to be talking in more detail about the book. So thanks for tuning in. See you next time. Bye. Young, before my